Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Hard Currency, the Financial Times podcast on the foreign exchange market. I'm Roger Blitz, and we enter the short holiday period reflecting on the end of the first quarter, a quarter dominated by the words VIX and Powell, inflation, dollar weakness, policy normalisation, Korea, and a few beginning with T, tariffs, trade war, transition and Tillerson. In actual fact, I've forgotten the big one, which is Trump. So what have we learnt from the first quarter to guide us through the next 3 months? With me is Silvia D'Angelo, Senior Economist at Hermes Investment Management. Silvia, welcome. What are your takeaways from the first quarter of 2018?
So at the end of last year, looking at 2018, we had a fairly constructive outlook. So we saw decent data, strong surveys, and in general, dynamics were supportive of a continuation of the global synchronized upswing that had started at the beginning of 2017. However, we also recognized that there was a big risk in the picture, and that was protectionism. And we came up with this story of a year of two halves, where the first half is dominated by the positive fundamental picture,
yes,
and the second half would be more dominated by trade tensions and anxiety surrounding protectionism.
But it's happening now, isn't it?
It's happening a bit earlier than we expected, but I would say that our story is still on track. Because there's still a lot of uncertainty about the actual outcome,
yes,
of this interaction between the US and China. It will take some time for the Trump administration to define tariffs. And more importantly, negotiations between the US and China are still ongoing. And we might see a positive outcome where China gives some concessions in terms of access to its domestic mm-hmm. markets. And I'm thinking especially about financial services. And the US only puts some symbolic tariffs, mainly targeting its domestic okay. audience ahead of the midterm elections.
So it's going to be messy then, this trade issue, and it's going to be not the clarity that we had in January when the markets were euphoric. It's going to be a very, very sticky second quarter, which actually may make the second half just as uncomfortable, I suppose, for markets.
That said, I think that in the second quarter, these kind of negotiations might happen in the background and the market might have an opportunity window to really focus on still positive fundamentals. We might get like some positive earnings on Q1. There are not so many political deadlines mm-hmm. Like we had in Q1. And so Q2 might be like an good opportunity for equities and might provide some stabilization. Okay. Of course, the story is different for the second half.
Okay, but let's look at some of the factors that were dominating the first quarter. Inflation was in our minds all the time. Have we learned anything about the pattern of inflation? Are we getting any closer to these targets, or is it still going to plod along as you know at these kind of levels?
So in Q1, we had a couple of speed bumps,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
The main one was really inflation. So we had a couple of strong inflation number after the US on wages and also
yes.
to some extent on
February
CPI.
February the 4th, that big day when
yeah.
suddenly...
January wage inflation surging
yes.
close to 3%.
And that actually led to the equity correction, didn't it?
Yes, that yeah. triggered the equity correction.
Yes.
Of course, there was probably some stretched valuations out
yes.
there. Market participants were probably well aware of a bit of a overstretch in,
yes.
in equities. And so this wage number was probably just a trigger for some underlying disconnections in a way. And then, of course, all those readings were reversed the following month. confirming a view, which is also my view, that in general inflationary pressures are contained. They are building up, but very gradually.
Right.
And of course, monetary policy is also responding gradually.
Well, that's my next question, which is central banks. You know, what do we learn about them? Obviously, Powell arrived, and he seems to have played the Janet Yellen playbook to perfection. But I suppose more attention has been focused on the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank and whether they are moving closer towards normalizing policy or at least taking away taking the foot off the pedal of quantitative easing. What do you think as they enter the second quarter, where do you think they stand?
So going back to your previous question, I think that the second potential speed bump could have been Powell. And actually, during his first testimony, yes, he sounded somewhat hawkish, suggesting that he might mark a new phase for the Fed. Instead, during his first appearance as chair at the March Fed meeting, it was, completely continuity. Yes. So basically, same theme of Yellen, gradualism, and adherence to the same monetary policy framework. And I think that the market got it. So, as you say, the targets probably right now are the ECB and the Bank of Japan. The FX market in particular has already put some pressure on these central banks. And they have, I would say, forcefully pushed back. So the Bank of Japan made clear that they are sticking to their yield curve control policy as long as inflation is below their 2% target. And similarly, in recent occasions, Draghi has sounded quite dovish, suggesting that the war has not been won yet. Inflation is still running well below their target. They're not seeing a convincing upward trend in inflation, and monetary policy support is still needed.
So is this a reason for the dollar bears to think again? They were the ones who did extremely well out of January. And people have been talking about the continuation of dollar weakness through 2018. But if the ECB and the BOJ are going to be dovish and going to slow down and not push the button towards policy normalization, does that mean that we've slightly lost sight of the fact that policy divergence is going to be the key strong theme of this year? After all, the Fed is going to carry on raising rates. Who else is?
Well, we've already seen some stabilization in FX market in the last couple of months, sure, I would say, after the big dollar sell-off in January. However, I think that the dollar fundamentals are still quite weak and that monetary policy is part of the reason. As we discussed, monetary policies are still divergent at the moment. But the FX market always tends to look forward. And so I think it will continue to anticipate some kind of convergence down the road.
Yes. It's that phrase down the road that makes me slightly... down the road could be any time between, you know, next month or in 3 years' time. I mean, that's quite a long way down the road, isn't it?
Well, the thing is that, the ECB has already started to withdraw some support,
yes,
very gradually, yes, very slowly. And I think that the process will continue. And I think that the Bank of Japan might also look at the issue next year. So it's not like a short-term story. But typically, FX market tend to front-run this kind of event.
We've talked about the euphoria of January. We also need to talk about this kind of synchronized global growth that actually has been connected to the euphoria of equities. And there is talk of whether it's plateaued, whether we're coming off it, whether we've slightly overplayed it. What's your view? Has it passed as quickly as it's arrived, this synchronized global growth story?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, that fundamentals are still quite positive and that growth is likely to continue in the short term. But it's true that we have probably plateaued, so growth has probably stabilized.
So
we have
already seen the peak. But it doesn't matter that much, you're saying?
I think that the general background is still supporting, so it's not like we'll see a slowdown, but we'll probably see like a stabilization.
Yes. I just want to ask you about Trump in general. You obviously referred in some detail about the trade issue. In broad terms, though, the market seems to be as worried about Trump as it always has been. I always thought the market would eventually come around to being quite phlegmatic about Trump and, you know, not treating everything he does with such seriousness. But it seems to be his ability to surprise and alarm is unending. The change in the cabinet, but in some ways the positive side of the North Korea talks. What do you has he got the is there still a lot of political risk out there related to Trump that the markets are concerned about?
Well, I think the market has had like an ambiguous attitude to Trump.
Great word. Yes.
So after the election, there were some concerns, but they quickly disappeared as the market focused on the positive aspects of Trump's program. Mm-hmm. So the tax cuts and the tax reform, which he eventually delivered. He also delivered some fiscal stimulus on top with the budget deal in February. But the problem is that Trump is now moving, having exhausted all the positive side of his agenda, is now moving to protectionism, which was always part of his program. But for some reason, the market preferred to ignore it, at least initially. And, well, I had the impression that the market became kind of complacent with respect to Trump. And again, I'm probably obsessed with it, but if this trade tariff situation escalates and we start to see some impact on the economy, then, of course, the market attitude to Trump will change again.
Okay. Just finally, Sylvia, the one currency which has quietly gone about its business, rising steadily in a background of improved political stability, a reasonably good economic performance, is sterling. Is sterling the quiet climber in the forex story? Is it going to have a surprisingly good year? Or is it too soon to say?
I think it's too soon to say.
Oh, God.
So, first of all, I think that the strength in sterling was more of a dollar story.
Yes.
So it was more about dollar weakness. Rather than sterling strength. And second, I think that we are not out of the wood yet. So it's now likely that we'll get a transition deal. But of course, nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. So there's still some way to go to get there. Yeah. And more fundamentally, even if we get a transition deal, it's like kicking the can down the road. And there's still like huge uncertainty surrounding the terms that will finally regulate trade between the UK and the EU once Brexit really happens in 2021.
You see, it's like the weather, Sylvia. We're trying to see the upside in everything.
I have to say, I'm quite positive on the UK in the short term. So I think that the currency should be pretty much stable, let's say, for the next quarter. And we might see a bit better growth, especially because of the improvement in real incomes, because of slightly stronger wage inflation, and especially lower consumer inflation. But that said, down the road, the risk is still quite high.
I was just about to say an excellent upbeat note to end on, but you just stole it away from me. My thanks to Sylvia Dall'Angelo of Hermes. So that's all from Hard Currency. Join us again next week, a week likely to be dominated by the US payrolls data. Until then, a happy Easter and Passover to you all. Goodbye.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.